I guess I don't want to stand there. Thanks a lot for having me. It's great to be here. It's great to have a sort of physics-y, maths-y audience. And to some extent, I've tailored my talk to that composition of physicists and mathematicians. So there are going to be lots of things in here which I don't really understand, but have sort of physics-y names. So I'm hoping someone in the audience can explain them to me. And so the point of the talk is to show that the study of character varieties and BPS states and quantum groups and perverse filtrations somehow all fit together in this strange machine, which, like I say, is only partially understood. Okay, so on with the show. So as promised, in this talk, we're going to segue from smooth character varieties to singular ones and stacky ones. So throughout sigma G be a genus G Riemann surface. So this was the object studied in Tomasz's talk. The one in the superscript used to be a TW for twisted, but I got told off. Apparently this has nothing to do with twisted character varieties. So the one now is the power of the nth primitive root of unity I put next to the identity in the defining relation. So this is sort of degree one version. This is a smooth variety. It's acted on by GLNC by conjugation. The action is not free, but it factors through a PGLN action, which is free. And so the quotient that we get, so this is just the definition of this smooth character variety, which is the quotient of this affine variety by that action, is smooth. And so there are various cohomology theories kicking about, and they all come to more or less the same thing by Poincaré duality. So I hope I've got this right. So one could study, one classically studies the cohomology of this guy, but one could equally well study the Borel-Moore homology, but there's a shift. And as the talk goes on, I'll be less and less correct with my shift, just to save space, but I hope I've at least got this one right. Okay, so that was sort of this morning. And then, as promised, if we replace that first power of the nth primitive root of unity with a zeroth power, then it goes away. And we end up with this variety, which is horribly singular. It has a very nasty singularity at the place where all of the A's and all of the B's are the n by n identity. But this is the thing we're going to study. There are two things we can do with it. So now the PGLNC action is no longer free on that horribly singular point I described, that's stabilized by the whole of PGLNC, so the action is certainly not free. So we could study the coarse moduli space. That will make a fleeting appearance later, but what we really want to study in this talk is the character stack, which is just the stack theoretic quotient of this XGN by the simultaneous conjugation action. So this is singular, and it's really a stack. So it has this very sort of most stack theoretic point at the bit where all of the A's and B's are the identity, but also there's a lot of other stackiness going on here. And of course, it's also singular. So it's a more frightening object. But we're going to, one of the points of the talk is that we can somehow tame it. There's a zero superscript. I put it in brackets because then I'm going to just ignore it, delete it. So where there's no superscript, it's a zero. Like I say, I got cajoled into changing my notation at the last minute. Okay, so here, because this thing is singular, it does make a difference which cohomology theory we take. It makes a real difference, not just up to duality and shift and whatnot. And the thing that you're meant to take for a variety of reasons is the Borel-Moore homology. This is because, from my point of view, this is because this is vector dual to the compactly supported cohomology. And compactly supported cohomology behaves well with respect to stratifications because of the long exact sequence in compactly supported cohomology. If you look at the sort of motivic class of a variety, this obeys the cut and paste relations, and the sort of cohomology theory that obeys those same cut and paste relations is the class of the compactly supported cohomology in the Grothendieck group of mixed Hodge structures or whatever. So from a DT theorist or Donaldson Thomas theorist point of view, this is the right cohomology theory.
Just a bit out of the book, but are either of those?
Can someone who knows anything about gauge theory answer that question? Well, actually, I think I
maybe cohomology.
So, I mean, one is really the vector dual of the other. I think I'm going to come back to this, but later. So yeah, just to reiterate the point, this is not the cohomology, the same as the cohomology of this stack. It's something really different. Okay, but this is the thing we're going to study. And the sort of the segue is that both of these cohomologies are going to sort of contain the same data, at least conjecturally. I.e. one determines the other conjecturally. I'll, again, as the talk goes on, that will be fleshed out. Okay, so how do you get invariance out of cohomology? You take characteristic functions. So here I'm just essentially establishing notation. So let V be some n-graded mixed Hodge structure, or n-graded, cohomologically graded mixed Hodge structure. So the thing to have in mind is the thing from the previous slide, where the n-grading is given by the rank, and the cohomological grading is just the usual cohomological grading. Then we define its characteristic function like so. So these will be, so what does appropriately bounded mean? It just means that if I take the characteristic function, then I get something well-defined, i.e. at no point am I trying to take an infinite alternating sum over infinitely many non-zero things. And also that for sufficiently low powers of q, that should be a q to the half. So for sufficiently low negative powers of q, or just sufficiently big negative powers of q to the half, the thing vanishes. I.e., there's a sort of finite order pole for each coefficient of x. That's what I mean by appropriately bounded. So the characteristic functions of the cohomologies from the previous slide are appropriately bounded in this sense. So we've already seen the plethystic exponential in Tamash's talk. I'm going to reintroduce it in a way that is more convenient for the purposes of this talk. It's an operation defined on these power series, but with a vanishing constant term and landing back in these power series, but now the constant term will in fact be one. And it's the unique operation that intertwines taking the symmetric algebra, or the free commutative algebra generated by some big graded mixed Hodge structure, and taking its characteristic function. So the way to think of plethystic exponential for the purposes of this talk is it's the decategorification of passing to the commutative algebra generated by something and then forgetting the algebra structure. That's all it is. So if one takes all of the computations from the paper of Hausen Viegas on mixed Hodge structures on character varieties, so the sort of more famous aspect of that paper is the smooth calculation, but they also do the stacky calculation. And what they find is, really this is the combination of two theorems. They calculate the left-hand side and the right-hand side explicitly, and they show that they're equal. Going back, here I've got the variety. So this variety that was defined as a PGLN quotient, but then I'm multiplying by the C star equivariant cohomology of a point. This generating function will be the same thing as if I'd taken the stack theoretic quotient of my variety by the whole of GLN. So as a sort of notational convenience, and to try and help the audience a little bit, throughout this talk, whenever you see something that has a math frac thing going on, it's genuinely a stack. And when it has a Roman R, it's genuinely a variety. So this fact about, if I just take the stack theoretic quotient of my smooth variety by the whole of GLN, I get that same thing after I take the characteristic function. And so I can re-express this equality from before the jump as if I take the direct sum over all n greater than or equal to 1, of the characteristic function of, if I take this graded mixed Hodge structure, where the grading is coming from the direct sum here, of the mixed Hodge structure on the stack theoretic quotient of the smooth character variety by the whole of GLN, and then take the platistic exponential, I get the characteristic function for the Brelmore homology of the stack that we actually care about, where the grading is coming from the same source. Oh, yeah. Oh, nothing. Except, well, that's probably what I should do. So I should say, that would involve some shifts, which is kind of not a serious issue. A slightly more serious issue is that there should just be some shifts here anyway. I should shift the nth degree piece by q to the g minus 1 n squared. Okay, but I'm being slack with shifts. Okay, so the motivating question for basically the rest of the talk is, can we categorify this equation? Platistic exponential is the decategorification of taking the symmetric algebra generated by something, and taking the characteristic function is, again, a decategorification. The categorification of this equation would be an isomorphism between sim of this graded mixed Hodge structure and this mixed Hodge structure. This would be a much stronger statement. Having that isomorphism would be a much stronger statement than what's on the board. Okay, so the way we arrive at such a statement is via non-commutative DT theory. I'm not going to assume, well, obviously some people in the audience know this pretty well, but I'm not going to assume that everyone in the audience knows anything about this. So what are the ingredients? We start with a non-commutative smooth algebra. For the purposes of this talk, all that means is that for every n, the moduli stack of n-dimensional representations of A is a smooth stack. So I think I have some examples. So take so this is the free non-commutative polynomial algebra in these generators where I've inverted some. If I wanted to form the stack of n-dimensional modules for this algebra, I would take m copies of GLN, and then n copies of n by n matrices, and then take the simultaneous conjugation action by GLN, and that's a smooth stack. And then another sort of common source is I let A be the free path algebra of a quiver. That's not an example that we'll think much about in this talk, but it's a sort of very interesting parallel talk. Okay, the other ingredient for non-commutative DT theory is W, which is an element of A up to the commutative vector space of A, so the vector space spanned by things with the form AB minus BA. So you should think of these two bits of data together as giving you something like a non-commutative Landau-Ginzburg model. And by looking at the representation stacks for each dimension, we get genuine Landau-Ginzburg models. And what's the function in that genuine Landau-Ginzburg model? It's the trace of W. So given this element W, I get a function on each stack of representations of A that takes a representation to a trace of rho evaluated at W. And here you see why we've taken, or why we can take this quotient because of the cyclic invariance of the trace. Okay, so those are the only two ingredients for non-commutative DT theory, or once you understand non-commutative DT theory, those are the only two ingredients you need to start churning out invariants. And what are those invariants? So I'm going to go ahead and call them the BPS invariants. So here on the left-hand side, we have something that I've almost defined. You take the cohomology of the stack of n-dimensional representations of A, but you don't take the cohomology with coefficients in the constant sheaf. You take coefficients in the perverse sheaf of vanishing cycles, or really the perverse mixed Hodge module of vanishing cycles. The next slide will be all about this, so let me just put that to one side for now.
Can I think about the Laplace phi, right?
Say again?
Can I think about this cohomology of the Laplace phi, right?
I want to say yes. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Well, obviously,
Yeah, if you think that way, you won't go far wrong. Okay, so we have some massive generating function over here. I think as Tamás mentioned, for any generating function that starts with a 1, you can always take the plethystic log. That is to say, this thing is the plethystic exponential of something, which we write at first somewhat arbitrarily in this form. So these guys are going to be the BPS invariants. They depend on A, they depend on W, and there's one for each N. And they are a priori formal Laurent power series in Q to the half. So if I take the plethystic log of this, I get something of the form in brackets here. But the sort of definition stroke theorem is that these guys are actually Laurent polynomials. So I think I've already said this. It is easy to show that there are unique omegas satisfying this equation, and they might have a finite order pole at zero. The statements that these invariants are actually Laurent polynomials is the integrality conjecture or theorem, which at least in this form is proved by Konsevich and Sloberman in their paper on cohomological Hall algebras. Yeah, that's fine. The coefficients here are all integers, so it's. Yeah, actually, I should say, because it's extremely confusing, the name of this conjecture is a sort of historical accident. There's no conjectural integrality in sight. I would much rather just call this the finiteness conjecture or the polynomiality conjecture. The fact that these guys have integer coefficients is free, but the fact that they're actually polynomials or Laurent polynomials is extremely deep and difficult. Okay, so another motivating question is, can we categorify this theorem stroke definition? I.e., again, we have a characteristic function here, which is a decategorification applied to this thing, which lives in a category. And here we have a decategorification of sim. So the categorification of this definition stroke theorem would be that this cohomology or graded mixed Hodge structure is the underlying graded mixed Hodge structure of the symmetric algebra generated by something of the form something that is, again, graded, and such that each graded piece looks like a bounded mixed Hodge structure, i.e. this sort of polynomiality says that these mixed Hodge structures giving rise to these guys should be bounded, tensored with, this is essentially the C-staric variant cohomology of a point with a shift, which we'll come back to. So that's the categorification of this statement, that this guy is isomorphic to the symmetric algebra generated by something that is still not at all finite, but has some sort of finite core, where the characteristic function of that finite core gives rise to these BPS invariants. Okay, so I promised that I'd come back to vanishing cycles. Okay, let f be a regular function on some complex manifold and just some notation. This is just the preimage of strictly negative real numbers. X0 is the preimage of 0. Then we define the sort of first approximation, the nearby cycle function, the vanishing cycle functor, on the bounded derived category of constructible sheaves on X via these two definitions. I don't know how illuminating these are if you've never seen them, so I'm just going to put them there and then do some examples. And I think that's probably a much better way for people who actually haven't seen these before. And if you have, you'll know these examples and you can sort of check back in for the next slide. So if X is smooth, then so I've used sort of var phi as opposed to phi to be this thing. This is a mixed Hodge module detecting the singularities of F. So as you can see, there are some blanks, i.e. there are going to be some caveats or provisos. This is not quite a mixed Hodge module. The sort of deep theorem of Gabber says that the vanishing cycle functor applied to a perverse sheaf is still a perverse sheaf. The underlying constructible sheaf of a mixed Hodge module is a perverse sheaf. So what we really need for this to be a mixed Hodge module is for QX to be a perverse sheaf. It isn't. It's in the wrong perverse degree. So we tensor it with this guy. So this is just a Tate twist. What is the compactly supported cohomology of A1? It's just one dimensional. It lives in degree 2. and also it carries a pure mixed Hodge structure of degree 2. And we want to, so we want to shift by something that looks a bit like this, i.e. this to the power of minus half the dimension of x. What is the tensor square root of this? Well, it doesn't exist in the category of mixed Hodge modules. It does exist in a slightly larger category, or the category of monodromic mixed Hodge modules. I don't want to dwell on that. So, I'm just going to establish this as sort of formal notation. But OK, for the rest of the talk, this phi f will be this guy, which is sort of, which I will define. And then you tensor it with something such that it becomes a perverse sheaf, and such that you don't change the weight, or rather you change the weight by the amount you change the cohomological degree. So that's all of this thing in blue is doing. And if you don't like it, you can essentially ignore it. Okay, so the M stands for monodromy. How does monodromy enter the picture? So here's the sort of everyone's first example. Let x be a1, let fx be x to the d plus 1. Then x0 is just the, if I let this be my mathcal f, and its restriction to x0 is just a constant sheaf at 0, there are d plus 1 nearby fibers, so this map becomes this map. And I meant to take the cone of it, i.e. the co-kernel, and then shift by minus 1. And the monodromy is what you expect. As you vary your nearby fiber, these copies of, as you go once around the circle, these copies of Q0, they sort of cyclically permute. And that's where the monodromy is coming from. Like I sort of say, I don't want to have any monodromy. So here's an example that has no monodromy. Let x be a2, let fxy be just the product. Okay. What's x0? It's just a cone. So its first and its second cohomology are both 0. And so this gives me an isomorphism between the first cohomology of the nearby fiber and the second cohomology of the vanishing cycle. So here, these are all being applied to the constant sheaf, these functors. Which tells me that, extending this long exact sequence to either side, you get that the cohomology of the vanishing cycle is all concentrated in degree 2. Also, it all lives at the one singular point of this function. So from what's on the board, you can see that the vanishing cycle functor applied to the constant sheaf on this guy is just the sort of constant sheaf at the 0, but with a shift by 2. So those are your two examples. Here, there's no monodromy. This comes to the statement that if I look at, this H1 is coming from a circle in a torus for a nearby fiber. And as I vary the point above which I'm taking the nearby fiber, the orientation of that circle, it doesn't change. There's no monodromy. Right. And this talk will kind of have this flavor, no monodromy. So I'm sort of slowly getting towards bridging these two things, Donaldson-Thomas theory and character varieties. And a sort of vital part of that bridge is dimensional reduction, which in this talk has this is dangerous, right? Dimensional reduction has a very well-established sense amongst people that study topological field theories. There's only a very tiny intersection between that sense and this sense, which I won't explain. I'm going to use it to explain how we bridge these two worlds. So here's the general setup. It's a geometric setup. Let V be the total space of a vector bundle on some smooth variety X. Let F, a function of V, be linear in the fibers, i.e. there is a V star valued linear form on X. And my function is given by, I evaluate the linear form of the base in X that my point lies above at the point. That's what this is in symbols. And I'm just going to define Z of theta to be the places on X where this linear form is identically 0. In this setup, we have a way of getting rid of vanishing cycles. That's somehow the point. So over here we have the Borel-Moore homology of V with coefficients in vanishing cycle function applied to the constant sheaf. We want to get rid of vanishing cycles. Well, over here there are no vanishing cycles. This is isomorphic to the Borel-Moore homology of essentially this set Z of theta. But because we take the pre-image under pi, there will be some, again, tape twist by the dimension of pi, but now with constant coefficient. So again, I think it will help to see an example. Consider the function from the last slide. This has this form. You consider the projection from A2 to A1, given by just remembering the y coefficient. Then in this sort of setup, we write theta evaluated at y, evaluated at x equals xy equals our function. So what is the locus where this linear form is identically zero? It's the locus where y is zero, i.e. on the base, it's just a point. But when I take the pre-image of that point, I get an affine line. And so, calculating the Borel-Moore homology of the vanishing cycle function applied to the sheaf, we get the Borel-Moore homology of A1, which is as before. Okay, so this is a sort of general result that gets us between these two worlds. So to build the bridge, I have to pick a specific pair of ingredients for my non-commutative Donaldson-Thomas theory. And here they are. My non-commutative smooth algebra is just going to be the non-commutative polynomial algebra in all of these generators. So these A's and B's sort of correspond to A's and B's you've seen before. And then there's an extra omega, which we're going to dimensionally reduce along. Just for clarity's sake, this is the non-commutative algebra generated by these guys. And the function WG is omega times, the thing in brackets should be somewhat familiar. It's the defining equation for the character stack. Okay, so plugging this into dimensional reduction, what do we get? So this is going to be our vector bundle. So the representation stack of this smooth algebra is a vector bundle over the representation stack for the smooth algebra given by just forgetting omega. And the map here is just the forgetful map. I have a representation of this guy. I have an underlying representation of this guy. This is a projection. And our function trace of WG is linear in the fibers. So you think of this thing in brackets here as giving our linear form. So what does dimensional reduction give us? So on the one hand side, we've got what we're meant to take over here. Where is the linear form zero? So how do we calculate the trace of W? We take, on the base, we take this guy, and then we multiply whatever's in the fiber by that guy, and then we take the trace. The only place where that linear form is going to be identically zero is where this thing in brackets is identically zero. So we get from dimensional reduction that the Borel-Moore homology, that this guy that sort of fits into the DT picture, is isomorphic to the Borel-Moore homology of this stack, the stack of zeros of this equation, matrix-valued equation. And just for a little bit of precision, I've actually remembered to put in the tape twist here. But this is just the defining equation of the character stack. So we get that this sort of DT theoretic thing is indeed isomorphic to the thing that I promised we were actually going to study. So this links the two subjects. And how does it link the two questions? How does it link categorifying the Hausdorff-Villegas equation and categorifying the integrality conjecture or theorem? So say we could categorify the Hausdorff-Villegas equation, i.e. we can write the Borel-Moore homology of the character stack as the symmetric algebra generated by the twist, not twisted, degree one character stack, as that on the first or second slide, this is what we agreed the categorification would come to. This would imply the categorified integrality conjecture for the pair AGWG, i.e. this left-hand side is the sort of DT cohomology, and this is exactly saying that it's isomorphic to the symmetric algebra generated by something finite tensored with the C-steric variant cohomology of a point in each degree. So as a sort of word of warning, I actually can't prove this. So in order to continue with the talk, what I'm going to do instead is give you the proof of the categorified integrality conjecture. So this should be seen as evidence that this, that such an isomorphism exists, or that this isomorphism holds. Right. And if we had such a thing, then these the cohomology of the smooth character varieties would be, more or less by definition, the BPS spaces or BPS cohomology for this pair. This is what the definition will just be. Okay, so the way we prove things in this subject, it's sort of, it all goes the same way. And it goes via, again, a sort of very general geometric definition that we then adapt to our purposes. So here's the general setup. Let P from, I guess that should probably be a math frac X in line with my promise to make stacks math fracky. Anyway, let this be a map from an Artin stack down to a finite type scheme. Then this map is approximated by proper maps if for all capital N we have a commutative diagram like this. So here's our original map P, and then we've got some sort of auxiliary space here, such that three conditions hold. First of all, we want P, this diagonal map, to be a proper map of schemes. In particular, this should be a scheme. We want Qn to be smooth. And this is the last sort of hardest thing to explain, that in sufficiently low degree, or for n less than capital N, the map I get in cohomology, given by pushing forward the restriction map from the constant sheaf here to the constant sheaf here, down to here, is an isomorphism. So the way you typically arrange, the way something like this would happen, for example, is say this guy was the same as this, but was obtained by removing a very, very high codimension subvariety, then you would get isomorphism in low degree cohomology. Yeah, that's not quite what happens, but we'll come to what actually happens in short order. So here are just some consequences. Say P has this property, and say this stack is smooth, then the push forward of the constant sheaf from here to here is pure. So this is like, I mean, this essentially is an extension of the BBDG decomposition theorem to a slightly larger class of maps. And the way you prove it is sort of easy. To show that this is pure, you show it's pure in low degree, or for any given degree, it's pure in that degree. And for any given degree, we can find some diagram like this, and we can calculate this push forward, or the cohomology of this push forward, by taking the cohomology of the push forward from here to here. And now this is proper, and so by the original BBDG decomposition theorem, the thing is pure. That's all there is to it. And it's only slightly more complicated and involved to show that if you have some function on the base, and you have a function on here that factors through the base, then the push forward of the vanishing cycle sheaf from here to here carries a natural perverse filtration. So let me just say in words how that goes. The vanishing cycle functor commutes with proper maps. So let's put the vanishing cycle functor to one side for now and just concentrate on the push forward of the constant sheaf. This carries a perverse filtration exactly in the way it always carries a perverse filtration when you have a map down from a proper variety down to any variety, as long as that variety is smooth. The push forward is non-canonically isomorphic to its total perverse cohomology, which in the end buys you that there's a natural perverse filtration on the total hypercohomology. Okay, so that gives you the situation without vanishing cycles. We're meant to be pushing forward the vanishing cycles down to the base. But because of commutativity of vanishing cycle functors with proper maps, what we can do instead is, instead of pushing forward the vanishing cycles applied to the constant sheaf, we can push forward the constant sheaf and then apply the vanishing cycles. And then again, we use that the vanishing cycle functor is exact to show that, again, the push forward of vanishing cycles is non-canonically isomorphic to its total cohomology, just like in the decomposition theorem. And this, again, buys you the perverse filtration in the standard way. Okay, so far this is just some observation, but there is a slight extension of the decomposition theorem to A, vanishing cycles, and B, a larger class of maps. It should maybe come as a surprise that this definition is actually useful. The reason it's useful is the following theorem. Let A be a finitely generated algebra, and let our base be the coarse moduli space of n-dimensional A modules. So a point on that base corresponds to a semi-simple A module, or a direct sum of simple A modules. Then the map from the stack down to the base, JH stands for Jordan Holder. So if I have a representation, I can take its Jordan Holder filtration, I can take the direct sum of the subquotients, and I get a point here. This map is approximated by proper maps. Doing great for time. So here's the sketch proof. Let this stack be the moduli stack of pairs of an n-dimensional A module, along with a vector space homomorphism from a fixed f-dimensional vector space to the underlying vector space of my module, then this is a vector bundle over the stack I care about. So this map doesn't change cohomology. This is a homotopy, this map. Okay. But this is still a stack, so no good yet. So we take a large open subscheme of this stack given by those pairs that are stable, where here stability just means that the image of iota generates the whole thing as a module. Then it's standard that this gives me a smooth map from here to here. It's more standard that if A is non-commutative smooth in the first place, so that this is smooth, then this space is smooth. So this is my QNPN, and there are three things I have to check. First, this should be proper. Well, in fact, this is a GIT quotient map, so it's proper by general theory. QN is the composition of smooth maps, because this is a vector bundle projection, and this is an open inclusion, so nothing much to say there. The third thing is somehow more interesting. So how, according to the Totaro construction, how are you meant to calculate the equivariant cohomology of a variety, or equivalently, the usual cohomology of a stack theoretic quotient? You take some very large G representation V, and then you take inside there a very large open U on which G acts freely, where large here means that the codimension of the complement is very, very high. And then instead of trying to calculate this guy, you calculate this guy. So yeah, I'm not going to be able to do this justice. But here, this is our large representation V. The sort of Totaro construction would be that usually we'd take, instead of taking homomorphisms, we take surjective homomorphisms. That's the kind of prescription there. This space here is actually slightly larger than the Totaro space. I guess that's what I want to say. Because if this map here is a surjection, then certainly the image of iota generates my module. But this is slightly larger. It's like a partial compactification of the Totaro model for calculating equivariant cohomology. And more precisely, it's a sort of relative compactification over this base. That's enough to tell you that the codimension of the thing that you're removing is very, very high. And so we have this third condition. Okay, so this is the takeaway, that the map from the stack of representations of A down to the coarse moduli space is approximated by proper maps. Okay, so now let A be a non-commutative smooth algebra, and let MA, as on the previous slide, be the coarse moduli space of all finite dimensional semi-simple A modules. Then there's a direct sum map on this guy because, well, in words, points in here are direct sums of simple representations. If I have a pair of direct sums of simple representations, I can take their direct sum to get a new one. And the point of laboring this is to introduce this. There's a symmetric monoidal structure on the category of mixed Hodge modules on this coarse moduli space. If I have F and G, I take their exterior product to get a mixed Hodge module here, and then I push it forward along here, get a mixed Hodge module here. I need this notation just to explain the following result. So this is a calculation or theorem of Meinhardt and Reinecke. The push forward of the constant sheaf, so here I'm being a bit lazy about shifts, the push forward of the constant sheaf from the stack down to the coarse moduli space is given by the plethysmic exponential of the IC sheaf, where here I'm shifting everything so that this is genuinely perverse and also pure. That will be important. tensored with the virtual cohomology of the C-star covariant of point modulo C-star, where virtual just means I shift by one. That's all you need to think about when you see this. Okay, so this gives me, this is a sheaf on the coarse moduli space, a perverse sheaf on the coarse moduli space. I tensor it, I take infinitely many copies of it, and this will be my sort of 1/1 - Q contribution here. And then I take the plethysmic exponential with respect to this symmetric monoidal structure. Okay, so that's their result. The way we extend this is we can just remove, we can immediately categorify this equation because everything in sight is pure using this hidden properness. So the purity of the right-hand side is sort of easy. The left-hand side follows directly. I mean, this was one of the observations that was on the previous slide. Again, we can commute this push forward with taking vanishing cycles by the fact that this JH map is essentially proper. But then we already know what the push forward along JH of the constant sheaf is. It's this. And then applying the vanishing cycle functor to this, we get this. So we've got exactly the sort of expression we wanted, that the push forward down to the coarse moduli space is the symmetric algebra generated by something reasonably finite, tensored with something that's basically cohomology of point modulo C star. So now, taking the hypercohomology of both sides, we get the cohomological integrality theorem. So this isomorphism is really just the hypercohomology of this final isomorphism. But now we now have a definition of what the BPS sheaf should be. It's just the vanishing cycle functor applied to the IC sheaf on the coarse moduli space. Okay, so the theorem says that the BPS invariant for any given pair AW is given by the hypercohomology of this sheaf. So let me give an example that sort of brings us somewhat closer to character varieties. Let G equal 1, then AG from before is this algebra. W1 is this. The support of the vanishing cycle sheaf is given by the critical locus of this function, which turns out to be equal to the stack of representations of the polynomial algebra in commuting variables. These two are inverted. And so the relevant part of the coarse moduli space is really the coarse moduli space of representations of this algebra. Points there are given by semi-simple representations. The only simple representations of this guy are one-dimensional. So what we end up with is that the support of the push forward is the coarse moduli space of length n sheaves on here. So there is an inclusion of the small diagonal into the coarse moduli space of length n sheaves on here, just by given by taking lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3 to the representation that sends a to multiplication by lambda 1, b to multiplication by lambda 2, and so on. So let this be the inclusion of the small diagonal. Then we can say precisely what the BPS sheaf is. It's the push forward of the IC sheaf on this smooth guy, so it's just the constant sheaf, but with some shift to make it perverse and pure. And this is explicitly what the BPS sheaf is here. So what this buys us is we can actually calculate the Borel-Moore homology of the genus 1 character stack, which is really new. This was not known before. Right, and now, okay. In general, these, for any genus, these sheaves are pure, and when we push them forward to the coarse moduli space of representations of the fundamental group, i.e. this is the sort of coarse version of the sort of untwisted character variety, these sheaves are pure. And the conjecture that I just wanted to get on the board is that the supports of these direct images are BBB brains. And there's a sort of neat heuristic argument for why this should be true, but I don't want to dwell on that. Okay, so to sort of decompress slightly, where else do we see isomorphisms between something that may or may not be an algebra and symmetric algebra generated by something, the PBW isomorphism? So let me just recall what that is. Let G be a Lie algebra. We slightly extend G by just adding a formal variable. So this is the polynomial algebra with coefficients in G, and it has a Lie bracket given by this. The universal enveloping algebra of this is just the free tensor algebra generated by this Lie algebra, but with this relation. And then the PBW theorem says that the natural map, sort of the inclusion, is an isomorphism, but not of algebras. So put differently and sort of weirdly, the cohomological integrality theorem holds for this, i.e. this is, this thing here, is isomorphic to sim of something like this. But the PBW theorem holds for many other quantum groups. So the natural question is this Borel-Mohr homology secretly a quantum group? Okay, so that's a question I'm going to answer. So this is a construction due to Concevich and Sloboman. Let A be a non-commutative smooth algebra. Let n prime, n double prime just be two dimensions. Then think of this as the stack of short exact sequences of A modules where the first module is n prime dimensional, the last module is n double prime dimensional, and then the middle one has to be n dimensional. And these pi's are just projections down to the first, second, third term in a short exact sequence. So this is just the sort of canonical setup for producing cohomological Hall algebras. And their result is that, you know, it works, that it goes through. So their result is that pull back followed by push forward gives us a product on the DT cohomology. This is more messy, but push forward and then pull back gives a kind of co-products going the other way. And then the sort of final observation is that both of these structures are compatible with the perverse filtration coming from the fact that, that this is smooth and that the map from this stack down to the coarse moduli space is APM. Again, there's a sort of neat heuristic argument for that, but I'm sort of pressed for time. Okay, so putting all of that together, this guy, the critical cohomological Hall algebra of Concevich and Sloboman, is a localized bialgebra with operations that respect a perverse filtration. So natural question is, what does the associated graded with respect to the perverse filtration look like? Turns out to be pretty easy to work this out. So take the associated graded and denote it like this. And let's start with the case where the potential is zero. Then this is included in this guy just because this algebra is isomorphic to the symmetric algebra generated by something that contains this term. We can include it and then apply the co-product. The claim is that this is given by zero for all pairs n prime, n double prime, where both of these are non-zero. And this just follows from sort of support reasons. This is an IC sheaf supported on the whole of the coarse moduli space of n-dimensional modules, whereas everything over here is sort of supported on the boundary. So when we pass to perverse sheaves, we have no maps. So when we pass to the associated graded, we have no maps from here to here. So in other words, this guy is primitive. So this is just this. I hear this u and a half. This is just us tensoring with the cohomology of point mod C star and then shifting by one. Seem to have lost at least one audience member. Right. So just by sort of general nonsense, the map from the universal enveloping algebra of this guy into the whole thing is an injection. But that it follows that it's an isomorphism, just because these have the same class of considered as sheaves on the coarse moduli space. Again, for support reasons, the Lie algebra structure on this space of primitives is zero. The Lie bracket is zero. Another way of seeing this is all of this lives in odd perverse degree. So this sheaf here is defined to be perverse. And then each of these u's shifts by two, and this u to the half shifts by one. So this whole thing lives in odd perverse degree. And so the Lie bracket, which respects the perverse degree, has to be zero. So in other words, the associated graded is just the symmetric algebra generated by the BPS invariants. And then applying the vanishing cycle functor to everything in sight, we get essentially the same result, but without the restriction that w equals zero. On the slide, there's a lot to take in. So now to recap this. So the way we prove everything in this subject is we work on the coarse moduli space, derive strong results there, and then take the hypercohomology of those results. And the way we derive those results in the coarse moduli space is we first assume that the potential is zero and then everything is sort of easy. So the sort of, yeah. Then we're just dealing with explicit IC sheaves, and we can, you know, there's this general machinery of CITR that tells us what to do. Anyway, so the output of this whole thing, just to recap, is that the associated graded of the Concevich-Soberman cohomological Hall algebra with respect to the perverse filtration is just a symmetric algebra generated by these BPS things, which are these hypercohomologies of intersection complexes. Okay, but with the vanishing cycle functor applied. Okay, so that's the associated graded. The associated graded is boring. So we wanted to find a nice Lie algebra structure on this, in fact. And this looks pretty bad. We've shown that it has a Lie algebra structure, but it's zero. So for a long while, this sort of I was quite discouraged by this. But in fact, it's not hard to see how to get a non-trivial Lie algebra out of this picture. So first, the underlying mixed Hodge structure of the BPS Lie algebra. So first, just note, this is, I mean, if I've been saying these things right, this is trivial. The first perverse piece of this cohomological Hall algebra is the first perverse piece of this. This just is this via the cohomological integrality theorem. And so what is this? We've got a bunch of sheaves on this coarse moduli space. This is perverse. This IC sheaf is perverse. We just shift it to be perverse. This functor preserves perverse sheaves. So this thing, all taken together, is perverse degree zero. Then each copy of U gives us a new copy of it, but shifted up by two in the perverse filtration. And then this U to the half shifts it up by one. So the first piece of the perverse filtration is just this. This is the sort of U to the half here. I.e., we just get, whenever we take, if we take the symmetric product of two things that live in perverse degree one or higher, then it's going to live in degree two or higher. So if we just restrict the first perverse piece, we take a very small slice or generating slice of this algebra, and it's just this. This is just up to this L to the half, this is just the BPS sheaf or the hypercohomology of the BPS sheaf. Okay, so that's what that says. And that is going to be the underlying graded mixed Hodge structure of the BPS Lie algebra. So what's the bracket? The bracket is just the commutator in the cohomological Hall algebra. So these two guys, they both live in perverse degree one. So a priori, when I take the Lie bracket, I end up in perverse degree two. But the associated graded with respect to the perverse filtration is zero, which is another way of saying that actually this lands in perverse degree one, which is what we define this to be. So, right, since the perverse associated graded is commutative, this Lie bracket is actually landing us back in the putative Lie algebra. So this is it. This is our Lie algebra, and the bracket is just the commutator in the cohomological Hall algebra. Okay, so that maybe seems a bit outlandish, far-fetched. How are we ever going to calculate anything like that? How are we going to use this? How do we know that you haven't just produced a zero Lie bracket again? Here's a friendly face. We're a long way from home, but it's nice to see a friendly face. So let Q be any quiver, finite quiver. Form Q tilde by first doubling Q and then adding a one cycle every vertex. And let our algebra be the free path algebra of this quiver, and let WQ be this potential. We take the sum over all of the arrows of the original quiver of the commutator of A with A star times the sum over all the vertices of Q of omega I. Then by just the general recipe, we obtain this BPS Lie algebra associated to this data, this algebra and this potential. And by general theory or just well-known results, the characteristic function of this BPS Lie algebra, now there's a grading, there's a multi-grading given by dimension vectors for Q, and the sort of generating series is this, where these are the Katz polynomials for our quiver. This is well-known stuff. Okay, so here's the theorem. Let Q RE be the full subquiver, so RE here is for real. Let this be the full subquiver of Q containing those vertices without one cycles. Then the zeroth cohomology of the BPS Lie algebra associated to this data is the strictly positive part of the good old-fashioned Katz-Moody Lie algebra for this real quiver. So this is a this is bringing us back down to earth to some extent. I hope I've done this right. Yeah. So Q, the original Q, might not have any one cycles. And okay, so here's a conjecture for people who care about this stuff. The cohomological Hall algebra, the Concevich-Soigmann cohomological Hall algebra, is conjecturally the strictly positive piece of the Mallinckrodt-Concov-Yangian for Q. That's what the sort of full quantum group conjecturally is. Okay, so that's meant to reassure you that we haven't gone completely off the rails with this definition. Okay, so now to the thing that I promised you. Earlier in the talk, I produced some pair AG, WG, such that the Concevich-Soigmann cohomological Hall algebra, the underlying mixed Hodge structure, is isomorphic to the Borel-Moore homology of the genus G character stack. Okay, so on this left-hand side, we now have a gazillion theorems and constructions and strong results. In particular, this has the structure of some sort of Yangian-like, so this isn't precise mathematically for basically the same reason that the conjecture on the previous slide is a conjecture, but some sort of quantum group, i.e. some deformation of the universal enveloping algebra of some Lie algebra, where the Lie algebra is what I'm going to call the genus G Kac-Moody-Lie algebra, is just the thing we defined in general. So it's the first perverse piece of this critical cohomological Hall algebra. So it lives inside the whole thing. And so this is what I'm going to call the genus G Kac-Moody-Lie algebra. So this is a sort of very jumped up version of the conjecture that the Hausdorff-Viegas identity of generating series can be categorified. This is really an extreme categorification. It says that if I take this thing, this BPS Lie algebra, which remember when we take the characteristic function, gives us the BPS invariants, which via the Hausdorff-Viegas identity are the BPS invariants for this cohomological Hall algebra. If I take the generating functions of the left-hand side and the right-hand side, I get the same thing by the Hausdorff-Viegas identity. But this is obviously much stronger. This is saying that this left-hand side has this crazy Kac-Moody-style Lie algebra structure on it, and that this somehow endows this very down-to-earth thing with a Lie algebra structure. So there's a kind of disconnect here. We have on the right-hand side something extremely straightforward and easy to understand and define and talk about. It sort of, you know, appeared in the first half of the first slide. And then on the left-hand side, something crazy that's quite hard to think about. Okay, so this, I guess, I've already said. If we assume that this is true and then apply the characteristic function to the implied version of the PBW isomorphism, then that is precisely the Hausdorff-Viegas equality, which I guess is, you know, evidence for this conjecture. This is confirmed in genus one. This is somehow familiar in this story that genus one is. Oh, damn. Yeah, I got this far. So the degree n piece of the Lie algebra should be. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so it's a sort of common story in this. Thing in this story that genus one is sort of doable because somehow it's, you know, it's like secretly commutative. This conjecture is confirmed in genus one. That comes from the explicit identification of the BPS sheaf in the G equals one case, which I had up on the board earlier. So the point of this talk was somehow to just blurt out lots and lots of these mathematical constructions or analogs of physics-y things, and sort of somehow convince you that they are at least connected. And really, you know, my takeaway would be answers to the questions that I pose. In particular, what have these twisted character varieties got to do with BPS states? Why do they belong in this story? And then one final question, which is purely mathematical now, which is this left-hand side, this has some crazy Lie algebra structure coming from, you know, the decomposition theorem and all sorts of other things besides. The right-hand side is somehow elementary. Is there, I mean, maybe there's an easy answer to this, and I'm just too ignorant to know it. Is there some elementary construction of a Lie algebra bracket on this? It's not. Ah, genus 1, I think the bracket is 0. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that genus 1 is...
And what is H here? The total cohomology or...
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm taking the direct sum over all n of the cohomology of the rank n. So this should be a graded Lie algebra. So this bracket should take me from the rank n prime and rank n double prime smooth character varieties, cohomology of those two guys, and spit out something in the rank n prime plus n double prime smooth character variety. Yeah, why? I mean, why should this be? Okay, I'm, I guess, over time. And yeah, thanks a lot for your patience. Yeah. Sort of. Yeah, like a local thing, like yeah, resolve quantum fold or something. So I think at some point I've worked out for the resolved conifold, that's the place to start, right? Because there, well, you know, in all of these cases, apart from let's say local P2, which is a little bit more of a headache, in all of these cases where you just have exceptional P1s, the DT invariants are somehow pretty manageable. What are the DT invariants there? You have a 1 for every dimension vector of the form n plus or minus 1, and then for each dimension vector of the form n, you have the refined DT invariant is q plus 1. So the h0 there, I mean, the h0 there, I think, I'm being recorded, right? May or may not be may or may not be the Katz-Moody Lie algebra for the Kronecker quiver.
Yeah.
And then, right. And then there's some higher cohomology pieces, which again, I think just commute with everything. Yeah. So, it's a sort of content-free extension of an interesting thing. I don't know. I worked this out on the bus to IST one time, so that's a short bus ride, as you know.
It's interesting. We also had a factorization structure given by thinking about the factorizing over a cohomology.
Yeah.
So I gotta hope that's going to be related to the Ormic.
That's a whole other talk. I mean, so what can I say? So if you look into that paper by Malik and Okonkov, and I haven't for a while, they have this sort of nice description of what the class that gives you the correspondence that gives rise to their stable envelope construction is in the Nakajima quiver variety case. And using that, I'm being recorded, I don't want to say anything. You can show, here's what you can show, I think, that their R matrix is an R matrix for the monoidal category of representations over the cohomological Hall algebra that was on the previous slide. Mm-hmm. So that's a non-co-commutative by algebra with some sort of localization there. And so I mean R matrix in the usual sense that it intertwines M tends to M with N tends to M. Yeah. That may just be an answer to a whole other question, but that's the sort of most interesting thing that I can say that's at least related to it. This was Yeah. So the pure part. Yeah. So there, again, via another conjecture, the conjecture being, remember that there's this most stacky point in the character stack. In fact, yeah, remember, you basically told me this. The normal cone to that is the stacky quiver variety for the G-loop quiver. And there's a push-forward map. Am I doing this right? Yeah, push-forward mapping compactly supported cohomology from the cohomology of that stack into the whole character stack. Something I proved using this technology is that the Borel-Moore homology of that Nakajima, of that stacky singular Nakajima quiver stack is pure. And also, your conjecture says that it has precisely the right generating series to be the pure part of the exp of the. Yeah, so.
Can you just take the pure part?
Yeah, I must admit, I've never thought of that question. Whether that map from the push forward from. Yeah, the reason for my hesitation is it's not clear to me off the top of my head why that push forward map in compactly supported cohomology respects the perverse filtration. Let's say it does, then. Yeah, but I don't know. So there are two types of framed representations. There's Nakajima style, where you double, and there's non-commutative Hilbert scheme, where you just have, you don't double.
When you double.
Oh, that's a shame. The answer to the other question is much easier to give. So if it's just a single framing, then by some mildly imaginative use of the decomposition theorem, you can show that all of those modules are cyclic. And that as you let the framing get bigger and bigger and bigger, these cyclic modules tend to the entire cohomological Hall algebra considered as a module over the cohomological Hall algebra. So they're the representation. Well, you know, either you like that result or you don't. The doubled case is, they're not exactly highest weight representations. If I take the entire cohomology, say, of the Nakajima quiver varieties for a fixed framing but varying dimension vector on the quiver, that's not going to give a highest weight representation. It's too big to be a highest weight representation for the entire BPS Lie algebra, but I expect it to contain one. So it contains a highest weight representation for the H0 by Nakajima's result, that the top cohomology is an irreducible highest weight representation for H0 of my Lie algebra, which is just the Kazemuda Lie algebra, and that's what he proved. What I would guess is that, just what I said. If I take the entire cohomology of Nakajima quiver varieties, that is a representation over this Lie algebra, and it contains an irreducible highest weight representation. But I don't know how to prove that, but that's only because I've only just started to think about that question. And it might be a matter of rereading Nakajima. Thanks.